Welcome to the Entrepreneurs Visiting Victor podcast with Victor Dadage, where you'll hear stories and strategies to help increase your sales and grow your business. Here's your host, Victor Dadage.
All right, welcome to Entrepreneurs Visiting Victor. I'm your host, Victor Dadage. I hope you're having an amazing day so far. Today, we have an incredible guest. He has 20 plus years in the business of personal development and human elevation. His experience spans business consulting, practice management, personal and business coaching, live events, and product development and launches. He's had the privilege to work with the biggest names in personal development, from the largest real estate coaching company in the world, Lavinia Company, as the director of sales, to working alongside Tony Robbins for 15 years as his executive of business solutions. In addition, he has partnered and supported the chiropractic community with Dr. Timothy Gay, Dr. James Sigafoos, and Dr. Reggie Gold. In the world of coaching, he has worked with over 50,000 individual coaching clients from every walk of life in virtually every country on earth. He's created coaching training, corporate coaching programs, and coaching sales strategies from his vast experience in coaching studies. So let's welcome Brooke Bishop. How are you doing today, Brooke?
Doing great, Victor. Thank you for having me here, man. Super pumped to chat with you.
It's great to have you on. And I'd like to get started, Brooke, but I'd ask you to please share your story. How did you wind up becoming an entrepreneur?
Loaded question. So there's actually a company back many, many months ago. Butted heads with one of the managers, and very quickly I became an entrepreneur. So it was out of pain came some incredible opportunities. So yeah, I had a new manager that started at one of the companies I was working with, and we just did not see eye to eye. And at that point in time, I was young and full of ego. And from that, we, they fired me, terminated me from the company. And literally the next day I launched my own coaching business. So it was pretty wild adventures, learning how very quickly, okay, cool. How am I going to market myself? How am I going to sell my services? How am I going to build a business when I didn't know anything about building or running or starting a business? And from that, it opened up Pandora's box. And that ultimately led to me moving down the field, working with Tony Robbins, which that was, it was very interesting because technically I was an employee for Tony, but it was such an entrepreneurial environment. Even though he's been in business for 45 plus years now, it operates like a startup because there's always such, he's just such an artist and a creative force. We were always creating new and moving and grooving at mock speed. So, yeah.
Okay. All right, so basically, when you first started working, you and your manager did not see eye to eye. So pretty much the next day, you were forced to become an entrepreneur because obviously you didn't see it eye to eye, and he let you go. And you did something very brave because you were brand new, didn't know much, and you decided to become an entrepreneur and to start your own coaching business, even though you really didn't have much experience, didn't really know a whole lot. So in a minute, I'm going to ask you about how that journey was the first 2 or 3 years. But eventually, you know, you later on wound up working with Tony Robbins, I think, for 15 years. And like you said, technically you were an employee, but there was a lot of entrepreneurial stuff going on, a lot of creativity. And I can definitely believe that. I went to his Unleash the Power Within a number of years ago, and I could just believe the way everything's going on, like 4 days of so much activity, so many things going on. And the one thing I do remember, not just walking on fire, on the burning coals, but every 15 minutes, he had us get up for our seats because he didn't want us to be complacent. He was always having us moving around, always like, so he basically, he just wants us not to be complacent. But I do want to get back to see how those first few days after, you start your own entrepreneurial coaching business. How was that? Because for most people, when they get started, there's always a lot of ups and downs. There's some struggles in the beginning, and they make mistakes, but eventually they learn something or they get a mentor, and then after a certain while, they start seeing success. So you mind sharing your journey, when you first went out on your own?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, and I was very blessed. I had my uncle who was my mentor. And so that day that I got fired, I called him in tears. I was pretty stressed out, pretty scared. And that night he goes, look, he goes, you have one decision you get to make. You get to decide who you're going to be when you wake up tomorrow morning. And it hit me like, you know, straight in the chest. And I'm like, okay, you're absolutely right. And so the next morning I woke up at 4:30. I met him at the gym. We did our workout, showered up, and I put on my suit. Now, it's kind of a weird behavior for somebody who doesn't have a job. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I'm like, I'm going to act the part and I'm going to act as an entrepreneur, even though I had no idea what I was going to do. But I spent that next day going into some really important questions. And the first one was, what is the deepest skill set that I have that other people wish they had? And then I went down the line of, cool, okay, so the people that wished that they had that, who are they? Where are they at? And how can I get in front of them? And that became my core offer. So my skill set really was in sales. And so I knew that I had a gift to be able to teach people how to enroll their prospects. And so I went, okay, cool. Well, I don't know how to coach and I don't have this huge nest egg of cash that was put aside at that point in time. So I'm like, okay, well, who needs to be able to sell their services? And I went, I'm just going to go get in front of them. So I basically went and went into every single business that I knew had independent contractors in it. So I went to every real estate office, every lending office. I went into every car dealership. I went into every property management that was within striking distance of where I lived. And I'm like, look, if you guys aren't making sales, you're not making money. I have a strategy and a system that'll help you. And so that was really how I cut my teeth. And I generated 50 coaching clients in about 60 days time. And it was literally just bootstrapping. It wasn't throwing tons of money at paid ads on social media. It wasn't even promoting on social media at that point. It was, I'm going to just go hit the pavement. I'm going to go do what no one else is doing. And in doing that, I replaced my income very, very quickly.
That's pretty inspiring. So it definitely helped that you had your uncle there to mentor you. So, and he told you you had to make one decision, you need to decide who you'll be tomorrow. You thought about that. You met him the next morning at the gym. And then later on, you left to go in a suit. The question you asked yourself was, what is your deepest skill set? And one of the things you realized is that you were very good at sales, but you didn't have a whole lot of money at the time. So you went to all the businesses that had contractors. So you went to places like real estate, you know, car dealerships and all that. So you hit the payment running. And I'm gathering you talked to a lot of different businesses, because I'm guessing not, you know, you did get 50 clients in 60 days, which is really impressive, especially for someone starting off. That's that is really, really good. Yeah.
But I was 23 years old too, which for that point in time, like, who's going to pay this young buck to come in and teach them how to sell?
Yeah. And 23 years old. So I'm guessing you also got a good number of no's, because I want people to realize that, you know, a lot of times you have to deal with a lot of no's before you get to the yeses. And I'm guessing you didn't give up. You still kept persevering. Am I correct?
Oh, there was a lot of no's. The one thing that I had that was, we want to call it a superpower, is I was resilient. I was okay with the no's because I was already used to selling. When I first started out in sales, I did not like the no's. My very first time picking up the phone to do a sales engagement, I literally was in tears when I hung up, because I was so consumed with, what if I didn't know what to say? What if they judged me? Well, you know, all the story that goes into it. But yeah, I mean, there was a lot of no's that popped up within that. But where I was really clear is I knew exactly how many yeses I had to get. The no's were a moot point. I was just 100% fixated on how many yeses do I need? And I'm just going to keep moving forward until I get the yeses.
Got it. So no one, I guess you said you had some experience on, which, so you were used to getting no's before, so you knew it was part of the process. So it did not surprise you. But you said your focus was on how many yeses you needed to get. So that's all you focused on, because, you know, you had to get to those yeses, and eventually you got to 50 of them. So for those that are listening, you know, that are getting started, want to go into sales and need to reach out to prospective clients, what would you say to them about dealing with no's? Because, you know, for a lot of them take a person, they think there's something wrong with them. You know, how should they handle the no's? Should they do what you do, saying you're focused on the amount of yeses that they need to do? Are there other things they should also focus on? What would you recommend?
That's a really good question. So first off, if you're afraid of the no's, there's definitely something wrong with you. No, I'm kidding. There's a few things. First, sales is a numbers game. And so you have to know that it's a numbers game going in, and you got to know what realistically the numbers are. And so the way that my mentor shared it with me, and I got to see this play out over and over and over again, if you talk to 10 people, there's going to be two people that for whatever reason, will never, ever, ever become your client. They're just not a right fit. It's not the right world for them. It's not the right offer. It's not the right time. Whatever the reasoning is, no matter what, there's going to be 20% of the people you talk to that will never become your clients. Okay. Now there's going to be 2 out of the 10. So there's going to be 20% of the people that if you completely screwed up your sales process, they will sign up with you because they need your product or service that you have. Now, the magic, the people that become really hyper wealthy, the ones that just absolutely blow doors on their numbers, are the ones that can figure out how to navigate the 6 in the middle. And that's where we really hyper focus on is how do you become the trusted advisor in your space? And how do you become the, you know, the person that they want to work with? Because not only they have the need, but you're really good at creating the urgency and you're really good about helping remove the fears. That's the magic. So going back to your original question, if you know that 2 out of 10 will never, ever, ever become your clients, you don't worry about the no's because you know that there's going to be 2 out of 10 that'll never be your client to begin with. And you hyper fixate on those 6 in the middle and how do you massage those 6 in the middle to the point that they become paying clients. That's been my secret sauce is living in that space, knowing that formula. But then I've got some other strategies I can share with you in a moment too, though.
Okay, well, I do that is one good strategy. I realized that, you know, you talk to 10 people, they're always going to be 2, no matter what you do, what you say, no matter how convincing you try to be, they're just going to say no. And then there are 2 out of that 10, 20, another 20% is because they really need your product. It's going to be really hard to mess up. They're going to sign up because they need your services. And then there's that 6 out of 10, that 60%, they're in the middle ground. So that's where you really need to work hard on because they can be convinced. But if you don't do a good job, you could lose it. So they can go either way. So you say you have to create a sense of urgency in them and to reduce their fears. Because those are two things that sauce people. Because if they don't sense a sense of urgency, they may say it's nice that, but it's not urgent. They probably won't go for it. And if they're fearful, they may not go for it anyway. But if you can get rid of those fears, they're more likely to buy from you. So did you say you also want to mention a couple other strategies?
Yeah. So one of the there's a few different pieces in the given day. So we call it the 4-4-4 method. So there's 4 things you want to do when you first kick into your work day. There's 4 things to do in the middle of the day. And then there's 4 things to button up at the end of the day. So when we look at this, my recommendation for people is what I call prime time. So that's the morning session piece. So we actually give away, we have a meditation. It's just a super short 6-minute meditation to just get your head screwed on straight before you kick in the day. The other piece of that is you're going to want to set your outcome for the day. So get really clear of what your outcome is. I actually encourage people to do a prayer of gratitude before they actually kick in to their workday. So saying a prayer of thanks for whomever is going to be put in front of you, knowing that something outside of you has brought that person into your experience. And then I do it, it's visualize, imagine, and feel. So you visualize your day, you imagine people saying yes and how you're going to feel when they say yes. So doing that as that pressure cooker before you start your day. And then we have strategies midday, and then we have strategies to button up at the end of the day.
Okay, so that makes a lot of sense. And how you start the day is so important because it sets the pace for everything else the rest of the day. So you mentioned, you know, 6-minute meditation session, which I think is very good, very powerful because meditation helps so much. And in fact, Tim Ferriss, the guy who wrote the 4-Hour Work Week a number of years ago, interviewed like the top leaders in all kinds of different fields. And so he had him fill out a survey. And one of the things he noticed when he answered this guy was 90% of the top leaders in their field did some form of meditation or morning mindfulness exercise every single day. So you can get some really good results from doing that. So I'm glad you brought that up. And you mentioned prayer of gratitude and thanks. And almost every single successful person I have ever interviewed, they always talk about the importance of having an attitude of gratitude. It made such a difference in their career and their lives, and I definitely think it's powerful. And you also said to visualize, imagine, and feel, because when you visualize the way the day is going to go, how everything's going to go, it makes such a big difference. And a lot of people don't realize your mind cannot differentiate between a real or an imagined event. So the more you visualize, the more powerful it is. So definitely some really powerful stuff. One other thing I want to talk about handling no's and that goes along with this is dealing with objections. So I'm sure, you know, for all these years, you've been dealing with objections. So some people, they get afraid of objections, but really successful people, they're not afraid of it because they know it's just part of the conversation. So how should a person handle when an objection comes up? Because sometimes people think, oh, I got this person about to sign up, and then they'll come with an objection, which doesn't always mean they're not interested, but sometimes people take it, they get defensive, they're like, oh, I lost it. So how do you handle objections?
Yeah, and it's a really good question. So first off, I see objections with a very different framework. So I see objections not as a reason that they're not going to buy. I see objections as limiting beliefs. So coming from the world of coaching, right? Well, if as a coach, you have a client you're working with and you know you're trying to help them overcome a fear is just a limiting belief. It's a belief that we hold that's preventing us from moving forward in some capacity. So I see objections in the same way. If somebody goes, oh, I don't have enough money. Well, my brain goes, well, is that true? Okay, well, not having the money is actually the problem. So what's the solution? Well, how can we get them into a resourceful state? How can we get them to get creative? The very movement through that objection, 9 times out of 10 is the same pattern that's preventing them from getting whatever it is that they want. So I use the objections or the limiting beliefs as a real strong conversation piece. Now, the other part of this too, every objection under the sun is going to fall under one of four categories. Are you familiar with the acronym BANT?
No.
Ah, rock on. Okay. So BANT. B stands for budget. A stands for authority. N is need. And T is timing. So you have budget, authority, need, and timing. Okay, so that's BANT. Every objection is going to fall under one of those four buckets, right? I don't have enough money. That's budget. Okay, or I got to talk to my accountant. Budget. Authority. Oh, you know, I got to talk to my team members about this, or I got to talk to my spouse, or I got to call my whoever's managing my trust, or whatever the heck it might be. Need is, oh, I don't know if I really need it right now, or maybe perhaps, you know, things are okay right now. I don't need to really change anything. And then T being timing, it's like, oh, you know, I'm waiting for my tax return, or I need to wait for a couple more payments to come through, or, you know, I don't have enough bandwidth to do X, Y, Z. So if you know that everything's going to fall into one of those four buckets, well, guess what? You can build out strategies to speak to those four things, right? And again, if you see it as a limiting belief, now you just need to have the skill set to be able to coach people through their limiting belief to navigate the objection that could come up. So the biggest mistake I see that happens is when most people drop an objection, the salesperson usually contracts. And they contract emotionally. A lot of times they even contract physically. You'll see them crunch forward. They get pissed off, right? So when I get an objection, I'm like, ooh, rock on. Like I get excited. Now, part of this is I've conditioned myself to get excited when an objection happens. Because I'm like, oh, rock on. This is an opportunity for us to have a breakthrough because you clearly have a limiting belief about whatever it is. And guess what? Your promised land is on the other side of that limiting belief. So I usually work at a standing desk. So as soon as an objection comes up, I hit the button and I raise it up. I stand up, right? Because now I'm excited. So instead of contracting, I'm opening myself up because I want the prospect to open up as well. If I contract, my prospect's going to contract. So if your knee-jerk reaction when an objection happens is to contract and then get frustrated or come back at them in a superior way, they're going to reflect that straight back at you. So that's just one quick way is, first off, don't see them as objections. See them as limiting beliefs. Number two is be mindful and go into the game prepared for BANT. It's going to be one of the four. And then that third piece is make sure you open when they come up versus contract, because they're going to reflect that back.
All right. So that makes a lot of sense. I never heard of BANT before, but it makes a lot of sense. Budget, authority, need, and timing. So it's going to be one of those four. And if you figure out which it is, then you know how to end. And you're right. A lot of it's just limited beliefs and fears. A lot of times they really want what you have, but they're afraid something is making them scared. So you need to assure them that if they go for it, they can overcome these fears, limited beliefs. This is going to help them. This is what they really need to overcome it. And I think part of it is also they need that assurance from you that you're going to be it. So you're right. You can't contract because they're going to sense that, and they're going to feel the same way. If they sense that assurance from you, I think they're going to be feel more comfortable for it. So that's why I agree. It's important not to contract. Be prepared for it, and just be open to it. Because I think sometimes if you have a defensive reaction, that's just you're almost always going to lose the client. Would you agree?
I totally agree. Yeah, if you go into some of the old school tactics and you just try and muscle somebody through there, buyers are just too savvy now and they don't want that. They want a trusted advisor. They want somebody that they can trust. They want somebody who's going to have their best interests at heart, who's going to care about them. And here's the important piece. Like if we think of some of the people in our life who have had the most caring conversations, it was probably our parents who had a hard conversation with us because they love us at such a deep level. Your prospects want that. They might not like it. They might get angry and they might turn into little teenagers, right? But at the end of the day, if they can feel your intention and if they truly believe you and they trust you, you can move them through those fears 100%.
Mm-hmm. Got it. All right. So the next question, which is, you know, just a consideration of all that we're doing is, you mentioned earlier about creating urgency. So what are some of the things you could do to help create urgency in your process that they're willing to take action immediately?
Yeah. So urgency is an important piece, right? Because there's three questions that every prospect is going to want to know and they have to be able to answer in every sales engagement. One is, why should I change my behavior? The second is, why now? And the third is, why should they choose you? Okay, so why change, why now, why you? The urgency, this is a really important piece. When you're in your question zone, or what we, on our side, we refer to it as the discovery zone. So when you're in discovery in your sales engagement, you've got to be asking probing questions and you've got to dig into here's where the urgency comes in. When they tell you that there's a challenge they've been running up against, you've got to ask them, how long have you been experiencing that? How long has this been an issue? And if it goes unresolved, what's the impact? So if they tell you, oh, it's been like this for 3 years, or they might even tell you it's been like this for 30 years, right? Or might just be like 1 week, who knows? But you want to find out, well, how long can you continue going down this road without it being solved? What's the impact of that, both emotionally? What's the impact of that monetarily? And here's the really important piece. And this is the cherry on the top of the cake. What is the meaning? What does that actually mean? What does that translate to? If you can get to the point where you're extracting the meaning that they give to it, that is the ultimate urgency. Okay, because the meaning is going to be tied to their identity. It means I'm a failure. It means that I am not good in business. It means that my staff is suffering. Whatever it might mean, whatever your service is, if you can drill to the point that you figure out what they're making it mean, that is like the holy grail of sales, because the meaning is going to give you leverage, which is a fancy way of saying urgency.
Yeah, and basically, one of the things you're just showing here is, and this is a mistake I think a lot of salespeople make, is they're trying so hard to convince them, you need this, you got to do this. But what you need to do is, like, what you're doing is you're being like a doctor, you're diagnosing, you're asking them questions, you're probing to find out what are the needs, the desires, the urgency. And you want them to come up with the solution, show them that you are the solution, instead of just telling them, this is what you need. When you ask them these questions, you know, what is the problem? How long have you had it? How does it impact you? How do you feel about it? And, you know, and what is the, you know, find out what the meaning they're attached to and saying, and how long can you go on without this? And if you don't do anything about it, what's going to happen is when they start thinking about it, because sometimes, a lot of times it's in their subconscious and they're not aware, but when you can make it fully conscious, they realize, man, if things have changed, it's been going like this for 2 or 3 years, man, I'm just going to be in big trouble. You know, maybe Brooke can help. Maybe he's the one to help me. So then they'll start saying, well, tell me more about what you can offer. And then you can offer your solution. Would you agree that's the way it works?
Yeah, definitely. And I love the fact that you brought up the doctor and metaphor with that, because what's equally important of what to do on the other end of that spectrum is the biggest mistake that you can make that will kill your sales is on the other side of that. And because you brought up the doctor frame, the biggest mistake that I see people making is they prescribe too quickly. So it's like if you walked in the doctor's office and they come in and they go, oh, I've got your chart here, and you go, oh, yep, you definitely need Viagra. Yep, I'm going to prescribe you Viagra. And you're like, wait, what? I've got a headache. Right? What salespeople do is they immediately start to tell people why they need their product or service, and they've done zero diagnosis. So to your point of that, yes, spot on. You've got to do proper diagnosis, but be very, very careful. Don't make a prescription too quickly. You've got to get all the pieces and all the symptoms, and you've got to know what's at stake before you move into that zone. Otherwise, you will literally turn sales away from you that would have easily enrolled.
So I agree. Don't prescribe too quick because you could lose a lot of sales that could have been yours. You know, yep. Definitely great stuff there. Now, as we're getting toward the end of our interview, are there any last minute pieces of advice you'd like to leave with our audience?
Yeah. Anybody, if you're out there, if you're sitting in that space and you're going, man, if I could just enroll one or two more people out of my engagements, or if your conversion rate is, let's just say if it's anything under 30 to 40%, there is absolutely a recipe that could transform your sales engagements and then transform your business. If you want that script and that structure, I'm happy to give it away to anyone who wants it. For us, we our domain for that for free toolkit is called closeeveryone.com. So if anybody wants that free scripting and they want the structure, and we've hit on a few pieces of it today, but I'm happy to give that recipe away to anybody that wants to amplify their sales.
Awesome. Listen, Brooks, thank you so much for being on the show. It's a real pleasure having you on. You show a lot of great wisdom, a lot of great value. I know I learned a lot, and I know the people listening to this interview learned a lot. And would you mind also sharing again that domain you just gave us? And also if there are any other ways people want to contact you, you know, what else they can be, what other email or website they can contact you at as well?
Yeah, a few different ways. For the toolkit, for anyone who wants to download that, it's closeeveryone.com. So close everyone. Anyone, if you guys want to stay in touch, obviously you can check out our websites, empirepartners.io. Additionally, we have our podcast that is live and humming as well. If you guys are loving the podcast game, our podcast is on iTunes and Spotify, and it's under The Coaching Equation. So yeah, few different ways of people, however they want to engage, definitely connect and happy to help support.
All right, sounds good. Thanks again, Brooke. Have yourself a great day.
You too. Thank you, Victor. Thank you for bringing me on, man.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you've enjoyed listening, please smash that subscribe button so you don't miss any of our amazing episodes. Please also leave a 5-star rating review and have an awesome day.